My name is Catherine Griffiths. You're listening to Type Radio. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
The other hero is my husband. I just think he's a really strong person and a gentle person and someone with great ideas and thoughts and thinking. He's very generous and has a lot of qualities I just adore, and he has influenced me as well in a good way. It's a really nice collaborative relationship.
He's in a different field.
Yeah, he's a documentary photographer.
Are you ever competitive?
Absolutely. I think so. I think we are, in the sense that we both have strong views on things, or we have strong desires. But because he's a Virgo and I'm an Aquarian, I think we do work well together. It's quite dynamic. So the competitiveness thing is complementary. And can you have competitiveness that is complementary? I don't know. But we seem to work really well together. We make great projects together.
Yeah. But does he criticize, for example, you said you take photographs of things that you see around you. You have these, your journeys.
Yes.
Does he criticize your work? Does it make you angry sometimes? Or?
He doesn't. He's not. He's kind of. No, he doesn't. He is just. He's simply someone who realizes that what I'm doing is quite different to perhaps what he is doing. So there's not a competitiveness in that we're doing the same thing. It's more. He's more likely to give me kind of feedback or comment or discussion, and probably in terms of photography, I mean, my thing is just a little hobby thing on the side, which he really enjoys and encourages me to do. His photography is much. It's his life. It's his passion and livelihood and. That's what he does and what he is, and I respect that, and he is of a completely different level and scale and everything. I mean, I wouldn't even put us in the same. We're not even in the same kind of area, but you could put us together and see what happens. Put these works together. Maybe we will one day. Yeah. Who knows?
What's your dearest possession?
My dearest possession. You could say Bruce again, my husband. but then I shouldn't say he's a possession, because that's very controlling. So
especially not what after you told us.
dearest possession. You mean material? Something material?
Yeah.
Okay. I think... I'm such a collage of things. I have... many things that are, what would I leave the house with in a moment of, what would I take? I don't know, maybe my camera, my little camera, I don't, only because it's useful to me and I can do things. But if I talked about possessions in terms of, you know, material things, maybe my ring, or maybe a piece of clothing, you know. I'm not sure. I can't even answer that question.
Wouldn't like consider your work or your oeuvre your dearest possession?
No, not my work. If I said most of my work is commercial, it's not mine. It's you know the work that I'm doing now. More so than I did before, which is this typography in the landscape, the Writer's Walk text sculptures, for instance, in Wellington, these large-scale concrete slabs of poems, three-dimensional. They are my babies, and at the moment they're under threat, the project, which is a living project. every couple of years we're adding one or two new poems to this walk, and it grows around the waterfront. It's under threat right now by someone who doesn't love them, and this person is on the committee that is now running the next kind of
sequence. Are you talking
about
like stopping the project being stopped, or what is there is being changed,
the design and concept, totally changing it. Not concrete, not three-dimensional, not probably not even typography that is well executed. You know, it,
do they want to remove them? Or?
No, they won't remove what's there, but what they add, the way they want to add to it is in a completely different realm, and it's like another writer's walk altogether. There's no connection other than it's about writers. So
is this because of change of management or something?
Yes, it's a change. There's a new committee run by a woman who doesn't have any understanding, I don't think, of what we already have. But the good thing is right now it's hit the newspapers in Wellington, and there is a public outcry against this, and I will go back to New Zealand and I may go back to some trouble, I don't know. But I think it's great because finally in the public forum in Wellington we're having there is a discussion going on around typography.
So you've created some awareness for people.
How long have for example, when did the project start?
It started in 2002, and so we've had, where are we, 3 years now? We first had 11 of these text sculptures installed, and they were dramatic. They made a huge impact, and they've been embraced by the public and by people from around the world, including Billy Connolly, who he referred to them. He kept visiting them on his tour in Wellington. He returned to the text sculptures throughout his program, and I mean, they've just been reviewed and acclaimed all around, you know, and we do things with them, going to A Type High and so on. And then since then we've added four more text sculptures, and that was on this new committee under duress. They kind of, but now they've really decided they're going to change, and so there's been a change in vision and understanding from the first committee to this third committee. They're mad.
But for example, how do you work on the project itself? I mean, how is it that you would, just on the, like a practical, in a practical way, how is it, what is the process behind it?
To start with, this committee decided they wanted to make a writer's walk, which is something you'll find in cities around the world. And they came to me wanting, they said, we'd like to design bronze plaques, maybe A4 size, and we'll put them in the ground in the Wellington Civic Square. And I knew then that this was an opportunity for me as a typographer and designer, but working in a literary way with writers' words, to make something that was going to be much more than that. Why have these things described to me already, bronze and A4? This is an opportunity to look at scale, to look at materials, to look at placement. And so I wrote a proposal back to them which really explored or gave them a sense of the potential for doing something extraordinary. And I said, this could be the moment that we can do something really special. And they loved that idea because there were people on the committee who understood that thinking.
Did you have influence on the poets that were chosen?
No, I didn't. And I wouldn't want to, really, because that's their strength and they should be able to be rigorous in their selection. And I think the first committee made some great choices of texts, pieces of writing, and my talk that I've just done is called I Live at the Edge of the Universe Like Everybody Else, which is that was the shortest piece we made, by Bill Manhire. And so once they selected the work that they wanted presented, they gave that to me, and I started designing, and thinking how I would make these works.
But there's some that you like more than others, for example.
Yeah, they probably are. Most of them I really like. I get torn between them. You know, I'll see one and I'll think, oh, I love that. And then the other one pops up and I think, oh, that works so well as well.
Does
so,
the public have a favorite?
I think they probably do.
Yeah.
There's one that is washed up on, it looks like it's been washed up from the sea. It's just lying on rocks, kind of just this big concrete slab just resting there kind of precariously. And people love that. And
can,
there's
can
one
you floating. Can you sit and walk on them?
Or yeah, it, you can. You can. Yeah, that's the thing. They're so tangible, and I mean, they've had their share of vandalism. The letters do come off with a good whack.
Have people tried? To,
Yeah. We've after they were unveiled and presented to the public. Within days, one of them had been completely demolished. Like there were letters all around in the water, in you know, smashed up and amongst the gravel, and no one could understand why this happened. Yeah. So we kind of had to address this because this became a real issue amongst the council and other people and sponsors and so on. But we worked through that and knew that the method of construction was actually good because if there was damage, it was very easily repaired, and we were able to repair or rebuild that one in a very straightforward way because of the system we have.
What sort of materials do you use?
It's all in concrete.
Oh, okay.
And we have the cast letters that are then glued with a very strong epoxy, concrete epoxy to the base. That's for one of the designs. That's for the three-dimensional, the very strong, bold set where the letters are vulnerable. The other design, which is a recessed style of casting, it's not a problem. So there've been those political issues around it, the discussions, the emotions, very heightened at times, and we've had to really work with people to get them to realize that you can't make art to fit vandalism. You've got to work in the environment. Eventually it'll die down, which it has. And the public are protecting them really now. Even the skateboarders, they love
really?
Them. They because they're part of the public and they use surfaces and they were using one or two to skate along. And one boy was found with letters in the back of his car by his mother, so she dobbed him in and said, you have to go and own up to this. What are you doing with these letters? And sent him off and oh, I think she even reported him to the police. His mother. So he was kind of given a talking to and a sort of fictional fine of $8,000 or something
That, you know,
and then it was suggested that he should help me repair them. But I said, don't worry. But the thing is that since then the skateboarding community is protective of them. It's just become part of the culture.
So it's really in the consciousness of New Zealanders, I suppose.
Yeah.
And the little boy has become a hero.
Oh, absolutely. He's brilliant.
It's an example.
Yeah.
But you don't see like people scratch or write like their initials and a heart and then.
If we do, then that is part of the environment. Yeah. You know, we haven't yet. For some, I think they command quite a lot of respect, and they're so different and bold that they're not. You know, they make you stop. And I think if that did happen, then. It's okay. Well, you know, it wouldn't be okay, but it is okay if you know what I mean. I mean, that's what the environment is about, isn't it?
But is this a project? I mean, okay, you speak about the woman that is that she sort of wants to change the direction of the project. But is this a project that is sort of endless? It is. It will continue. Yeah.
It should live and grow over years, but it could grow slowly. we don't have enough writers for it to grow rapidly. It needs, you know, you could add one every 2 years, for instance.
But there are other, for example, have you designed all of them?
Yes.
Would it bother you if somebody else designs the next, like the next?
Do you have plans?
No.
Yeah, do you
no, want no,
to,
no, but
can I invite you to come and
No, what I'm saying is what a, you know, there's that, because it is your sort of child in a way.
Yeah, it is my child. And but the strange thing is that the team, in a way there's a kind of design, right? There are these two kind of arrangements. The writing will shape the shape of these text sculptures, so you have to be sensitive to how the writing works and how typography works. So it could for someone else, now for me in a way it's a pattern. I know how it works, and each time I let the new writing take its shape and we make this composition and make this work. So I have that approach. It would need, if it went to someone else, for them to have that understanding of what the writing, the text is doing.
Yeah.
It's not really a creative project anymore. That's been done. It now requires someone who has a sensitivity to typography and words and can follow the kind of pattern and allow each piece of writing or poetry to shape each new piece. So it's kind of one of those weird projects which you could pass on to someone else, but it needs the understanding in the heart of it, because it's not only the design, it's where they're placed and how they are positioned, and that also takes the same kind of sensitivity.
How do you pick your typefaces for the? Could you? Is that like an unconscious or a really sort of feeling kind of thing, yeah, or is it like really?
Well, we're now set with two typefaces, and at the time the idea of, for instance, with the very three-dimensional one, I needed a typeface that had quite a lot of surface area, so it was a bold, it's Helvetica ultra condensed, bold condensed. It has a good surface area, which means that light and shadow work well with it. If you had a very open typeface, a fine or lightweight version, then like we do in the other style, but that is recessed into the cast into the concrete in a more traditional way, it wouldn't work. You would have too much shadow and light and you couldn't read it so easily. So it wasn't just a matter of selecting a typeface that I particularly liked. Mm-hmm. It was one that functioned really well. So there was a sort of aesthetic choice, but then a functional aspect to it as well.
So you had the idea of how to use the concrete before you sort of put the typeface to the technique, or
yes, because the typeface in a way was is carrying the idea, and also the writing would help decide that. I wanted the writing in the end, the writing, the poetry and the prose. Each piece chooses its own style of text sculpture. There are only two styles, so that's not too hard.
Are you going to expand the styles?
Well, that's the potential for it. If they had the vision to look at that, maybe we could. Maybe we don't have to. There is enough variation in the actual words and the forms, like the shape and the sizes. It's very organic, but it's, you want some continuity, but you, I think for this, the writing, the poems are the thing, you know?
Yeah.
spare the thing.
Typeradio.org.